Welcome back, everybody, to Master of the Universe podcast. Joey, Gabe, and Chris here, bringing you a classic 1982's Creepshow. And well, this was who thought of this one? Was it Gabe, or was it?
I'll let Chris have the credit for this one.
Was it you? No. Who thought
it was you? It was y'all two's discussion that led you to the agreement on this, but. I mean, I bought this on Prime last year. We were at Joe's house one time, like in May or June, and we were just hanging out, like on a weekday night, and we watched this, and so that's why I had some familiarity, some memory of it. But I mean, it's better the second time around, I gotta say.
Yeah, that's what it was. We were talking about films that we're gonna get to doing, and one of them, I know. I think I mentioned Creepshow, and then Gabe got Creepshow 2 over, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, now we have to go on. And then we decided we're going to go on an anthology run and do Creepshow 2. I've never seen Creepshow 3, so I don't know if it's streaming somewhere we'll watch it, I guess, but Tales from the Dark Side and Tales from the Hood, it's all in the works, so it's going to be fun. But before we get to Creepshow, Gabe, what's the news? Yeah, there's a bunch of shit going on right now, man.
Oh, man, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I mean, just as horror-related, though, Marilyn Eastman, which is pretty sad, you know, RIP, you know, she passed away this week. She was known for playing Helen Cooper from the 1968 Night of the Living Dead, the original black and white. Mm-hmm. And, again, that was pretty sad, so that popped up this week. Another thing was, since we were talking about Creepshow and, you know, we're getting ready to talk about this great movie, if you have Shudder, Creepshow is on there. It's a little TV series that you can go ahead and watch. Well, right now, they're up to season 3 coming September 23rd. So if you don't have Shudder, it'd be cool to get it. So that way you can catch up and see all the cool Creepshow episodes. They got some pretty up-to-date weird ones. In comparison to, like, what we're talking about, the old classic 1985. I think that's pretty neat. Also, too, Fright Night. Now, Fright Night is 1985. Fright Night, the old vampire movie, now they're coming up with a comic book November 24th. It's called Fright Night, Dead by Dawn. So if you like horror comics, things of that sort, or even this is going to be a follow-up right after watching part one. So if you're just kind of you're curious to see how, like, maybe the story continues. Now, I'm not sure if this is a 4 or 5 book series or 6, but hey, either way, it's still pretty neat. So if you like art, comics, horror, I mean, that's a good thing to kind of keep up with. Other than that, I mean, there's like a bunch of other non-related horror stuff going on in the world right now. I just kind of want to throw that out there, like, you know, the Nirvana, if you're familiar with the 1990s, you know, grunge type of bands, they got Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, you know, we all know that he passed away.
I grew up grunge, man. Dude, we were 11 when he died.
Exactly. Well, if you're familiar with their main popular album, where there was a naked baby on the front reaching for, I think it's like a dollar bill. Well, that baby, again, this is non-related horror, but that baby, you know, is all grown up now. He's a successful artist. Apparently now he's suing the surviving band members and pretty much the photographer and everybody associated with this, with that picture.
To be specific, because I read the not Rolling Stone, it was some other popular media article on this. He's suing Chris Novoselic, which was the bass player. He's suing a Dave Grohl. He's not suing Pat Smear, because Pat Smear wasn't in the band, so I'm glad that he was spared from that. Pat Smear wasn't there till the last album. He's suing Courtney Love, who's one of the estate executors. He's suing, like you said, a couple other photographer and album executives that were involved in that whole thing. And the reason I thought it was just so interesting, because I'm like yesterday my comment on it was, man, that kid's probably dined out on that for his whole life now, and he's gonna sue over something stupid like that because, you know, mommy and daddy didn't give him enough attention or some bullshit. You know, that's what I was saying. But then I read what he said, and he said, you know, I've always tried to get, you know, Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic, like, to let me in on, like, certain, like, conventions or art shows or whatever, other things, just, and not even, just once, like, nah, I'm not bugging him all the time, just one time, so I could advance my career, because they used my Naked Baby image to advance their album. I mean, come on, I'm not being unreasonable about it. I even made a joke picture of myself at age 21 in the pool chasing the dollar bill. I mean, come on, the guy now is 30. He just turned 30.
That is very interesting, like, how this guy is, like, really kind of expressing, like, how he was left out of, you know, the kind of profits that he thought that he was going to get. But, I mean, not only that, they took his picture and they threw it up on there. And as an infant, you know, he didn't really get a say-so whether if he wanted to do it or not. And I think that's, like, a lot of arguments that a lot of people are doing nowadays, that saying that, like an example, they're using, like, the whole gender thing. Why are you labeling this person as a she when clearly you shouldn't be labeling their gender at all? And they're kind of using kind of arguments like that. And I think in this case, like, here's another infant, you know, type of thing where he's like, well, I didn't really get a say, so why are you using my image? This is... scarred me, you know. And like you said, there's a little more background onto it, and you probably have more on the backstory on that than I do, but just kind of brief kind of checking that out. I thought that was interesting.
Did you see what he said? He said something like, he's like, the interviewer asked him, does it kind of hurt you when you're dating because people think you have money? He goes, fuck yeah, it does. He's like,
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, he's
The women think that he's rich, so they get with him. Like, all the, he says the hot women that get with him, they think he's rich, but then when they find out he's broke, that he's just like, oh, then he gets you know, dumped, like, right then and there. And then he says, like, what was it, some of the guys out there that want to hang out with them, they mostly want to hang out with him because they want to use him as, like, a way of saying, like, oh, this guy is famous, you know, I know this guy or something. But, you know, he says, like, no, there's not really anybody that's, like, real with him, you know, like, he doesn't have, like, any downright, you know, cool friends.
And they probably think he knows Dave Grohl and Pat Smear and Novoselic and all them.
Yeah. I can see how some of that could actually hurt you, you know, like, it, you're just, your typical social life and things like that, it probably does get annoying where you think you're actually getting on a friendly basis, but then you realize these people are just, like, trying to use you for, you know, for some greedy thing. People are shit, man. There's asshole people out there. And, I feel for the guy, but at the same time, I'm just like, well, you know, well, shit. I mean, really? You want to start suing people, I guess? But, you know, hey, that's what he wants to do.
He's at the end of his rope, yeah. It's like, what else is he going to do? I mean, I understand from his perspective as well as everyone else that, like us, you know, like, I'm like, you know, we all know what it's about. But, of course, if you're in that situation and times are tough, you're like, oh, fuck it, I'll throw a Hail Mary, you know? So,
yeah.
But also, I know you were talking about non-horror related to that. You know, you had showed me that new Spider-Man, and I was like, is that the guy from the original one? Because he looks so familiar. But I was like, no, there's no way that they would have the guy from the original, you know, or part three, I should say, right? Or two, part two, right? From the original Spider-Man series, the newer ones, 2000s. And I wasn't sure, and then I had saw on YouTube, they had a picture of the, because I thought it was the Green Goblin, like, you know, I was like, see, I watched the trailer, and I was like, oh, but they didn't show him. And then I kind of started thinking, I'm like, was the laugh supposed to be like, you know, so I started looking into it. And I was like, oh, all these old people from the other, you know, from the other series are going to make like a comeback. And I started thinking, well, of course, because that, you know, you have Doctor Strange that could fuck with the reality and the universes and timelines. So I thought I was like, oh, man, now I've been watching it like, you know, a few times during the day, like some, you know, like some fanboy, like some Mark. So thanks, Gabe. I probably wouldn't have watched it if you didn't show it to me. I would have just kind of overlooked it, but you always bring shit to my attention. So that's why he's in the bed. Yeah,
that's what I'm telling you, man. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan along with a whole bunch of other stuff. But, man, that that trailer, there's been a lot of leaks. It's crazy. There has been definitely a lot of leaks on what's going on in this whole Marvel Marvel Universe with the new Doctor Strange, with the new Doctor Strange movie coming now, and then you got the Moon Knight. You got these TV series that are getting ready to come out, like the Secret Invasion and She-Hulk.
So they're making another Doctor Strange one already? That's awesome.
Oh yeah, the Multiverse of Madness.
Oh,
now,
man.
Get this. Now, apparently, I don't know if you people want to kind of cover your ears for a minute, but here's like a little tidbit. Apparently, there's been a couple of leaks that they're saying that Patrick Stewart, who played Professor Xavier in those X-Men movies, is coming back.
Patrick Stewart.
But he's going to be part of it's in that it's going to show it as like a tidbit where Patrick Stewart, along with the Illuminati, will be fighting against Wanda Maximoff, which is the Scarlet Witch in the comic books. Now, you have to understand, when I say the Illuminati, this isn't... The comic books are... They're always slightly changed in comparison to the movie. So don't think like, oh, it's going to be Mr. Fantastic and the Black Panther and Submariner and Professor X. No. This is a... You don't know what these movie people are going to be doing. But apparently they are saying that Patrick Stewart is on board along with some other people and some other characters that... Supposedly that it's leaked that there might be some, you're going to end up seeing a whole bunch of time travel and universe jumping in this whole thing. And the whole idea is that people are suspecting that the main villain, which I'm excited for, would be Kang the Conqueror. And if you saw the Loki TV series, it just leads into, you'll kind of get that kind of tidbit by the end of that little series, and you'll see where this whole multiverse thing is coming into play. Again, you don't have to read any of the comic, but for those who do, like those Harry Potter fans, they read the books and then they go watch the damn movies and they get all excited. Okay, well, I'm one of those people. Not Harry Potter, but the comics. I love the comic things. And
hey, I gotta step in here. So when you see the Illuminati you were talking about earlier, are we talking about the true, like, first known incarnation of them, as they refer to themselves as that in Bavaria in 1775?
No. This special Illuminati would be part of the Marvel Universe, and this consists of all the greatest powers and biggest minds in the Marvel Universe. And again, like I said, in the comics, one of the main parts of the Illuminati were Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four, Black Panther, and Submariner, along with there are some villains in there as well. I think the King of Crime is in there. What's his name? Black Mask. I think he was like one of the major villains for Daredevil. But again, these characters, they kind of run their own thing, trying to protect everything on all four fronts, just to making sure the whole world is at peace, or even part of the galaxy as well. And because these people are like part of the greatest minds, but again, these are the comics. This is not actually, with any suspicion or conspiracies with the real world. This is all, again, Marvel Comics, it's suspense, thrillers, it's over exaggeration. I mean, it's fantasy. So, I mean, there might be some relations to some realism, but I mean, overall, don't try to compare comics to real life. And
I'm pissed. There's not going to be Rothschild family members setting up central banks. I'm pissed.
Alright, so Creepshow from 1982, man. So I saw this like a few times growing up, but it really, got really over with me the past like 10 years or so. But it's got like a fucking star-studded kind of horror cast. They got, it was directed by George Romero. Chris, where's George Romero from?
George Romero is from Night of the Living Dead.
There you go. That's pretty good. And we got the screenplay, and I think all the stories, were from Stephen King. And it has Adrienne Barbeau from, you know, from like The Fog and a lot of shit she's from. Leslie Nielsen, your boy, what's his name, dude? You know the is it?
Ted Danson?
Yeah, Danson. Yeah, him. They already say Leslie Nielsen. Yeah.
Where everybody knows your name.
So they have a really, really good cast, and, you know, basically this film, I'm going to have, you know, Gabe explain it better, of course, but it's like a comic book feel where they have a story outside the stories, which we have, what's his, Tom Atkins, like kind of being the book, you know, front cover and ending piece to these five stories that are pretty badass. So I guess we'll go ahead and...
Motherfucking Tom Atkins. I'm his bitch, and he should ask me how his bitch is doing today.
Yeah, that's like that little prologue, yeah, with what's his name, Billy, right? Little Billy. And Joe, that's Joe Hill. That's Stephen King's son. And yeah, so it was funny because I was like, when I saw him, like, acting all evil, I'm like, that's exactly how I imagine Stephen King when he writes his stories, you know, and he's like, you know, making that fist, like, you know, that the Crypt Keeper or whatever, the Vault Keeper is going to kill his dad.
That's the thing, is like, so not only, so the move, this movie was released November the 10th, 1982, was released in the U.S. after the Cannes, 6 months after the Cannes Film Festival, released on a Wednesday night. Now, on a budget of $8 million, it did in the U.S. $21,008,000, so when you figure in worldwide, it probably did, probably did a full 2,000% return on investment, which is not small potatoes.
Imagine if they released it at Tokyo Dome, dude.
Oh, 6¾.
It's a wrestling joke, Gabe.
Oh, I was like, didn't I got
Tokyo?
It.
He saw Tokyo Dome. He's like, that's news to me.
Pinche Dave Meltzer. But no, the thing is, so on top of that, Tom Atkins, this dude's an OG from '82. Because if you think about it, he had Halloween 3 came out literally 3 weeks before this, on October 22nd, 1982, or as I like to call it, the night before I was born. And then on top of that, 3 weeks later, fucking this comes out. So, I mean, that dude is the MVP of 1982 horror.
Yeah, he went on a run. He did The Fog. He was a Maniac Cop. Creepshow, Night of the Creeps. That one's, like, probably my favorite.
I love
that
one.
It's Miller time. And, no, he's just great, and he's still around. He's like 85, I think, last time I checked when I was doing my little research on this bad boy. But Gabe, you want to tell us about the prologue? Did you like anything that caught your attention when Billy found it? I had to put the subtitles on, like, and watch it a lot of times because you can't really understand what he's saying. Am I the only one that had trouble hearing that little fucking Billy talking about that? It felt like it's like those magazines I found in your dresser or some bullshit.
Yeah, he calls out because the whole point is that the dad's up there, and it starts off with the dad already telling off his kid, who looks like at least like around 9 or 10 years old, and he's telling his kid, you know, about
this horror
reading
crap.
This horror garbage. He's basically just tearing down the horror comic that little kid is reading, like right when he should be in bed. So he's telling his kid, he's like, you want to be reading this crap, blah blah blah. He's like telling him off, and then the son calls him out, like, oh, like the books that you read in your dresser.
Yeah,
what, now you're a snoop?
Yeah,
you're snooping around. So he goes and calls him out on that. So he gets pissed, so he's all like, I don't want to catch you reading this garbage again. I don't want ever see this. So he takes off, he's pissed off. The mom's just standing there like in shock, like, oh man, dang, you know, he's getting it good. So anyway, so he goes down, and the son ends up looking out the window, and then the damn dad's out there, and he throws it in the damn garbage can.
So you know where this is going, Billy? In the garbage. It's going in the freaking garbage. He's fucking rich.
He calls him out on
that. That's what you always said I'd be like if I had a kid.
Mm-hmm. That's the way my mom was with everything that I liked, fucking wrestling. She was like, I'm throwing this away. So that's
you know, you know what? Honestly, I think I only had that like once a long time ago. It was a Marilyn Manson album I had. And But I thought I misplaced it, so I was looking everywhere for it. I couldn't, and I was asking my parents for it, and they're like, "Oh, I don't know, I haven't seen it. I don't know. You lost it." Mm-hmm. Finally, it came down to it where I said, "You know what? I'm going to go ahead and get someone to buy it again." my mom found out about that, and she's like, "All right. Don't spend your money. Don't try to get it again. Why? I threw it away. You threw it away? Why would you do that? It's full of sinful evilness."
Yeah.
"Have you been seeing, like, what I've been watching? Why does the music matter?" "Well, music is different." "No, it's not different." Anyways, that was a whole other story. There's, like, more details to that. But, man, that was a...
We're all traumatized. That's why we watch horror movies even more now as we're older. Now, I had the same thing. Like, not to go into a super story about it, but when I saw Tom Atkins do this, it reminded me of, when I was a kid. Because, like, it was for, like, Christmas. My dad's side of the family gave me a bunch of wrestling shirts. And, like, it was, like, The Undertaker, Stone Cold, bunch of Bruce Lee shirts, Kiss shirts, all this. And my mom hated me wearing that. So, of course, all strategy-wise, she went ahead and waited till my dad wasn't there, because, she knew that if my dad was there, he would have been like, bullshit or whatever. She had her sister come over, take all my shirts, and then, like, she took off with them. I was like, so ever since then, I'm like, y'all are fucked up, you know what I mean? I was like 10, like, also, like, the same, like, 9 or 10. I was like, man, fuck y'all motherfuckers to do that shit, you know, taking my badass, like, all brand. It was like maybe like a week later, so... You know,
dang, you know, that's terrible, yeah, man.
It's a very, very angry 34-year-old man. So,
That's fucked up.
But yeah, Billy goes up to his room and he's like, "I hope you burn in hell, or hope you rot in hell." Oh my god, like,
he's wishing death on his dad.
Because I know a guy.
His damn comic. Well, then get this. So then the dad, he's all confident. He goes and sits down with his beer. So Tom Atkins, he's sitting down, and the wife is all like, "Did you really have to go that far, or did you have to do that?" And the dad's like, "Look, that's why God made fathers."
I love that line, dude. That's why God made fathers, babe. That's why God
he
made
it like
fathers.
Three times.
Yeah, and then he winks at his rose and shit.
Got the beer.
Yeah, he's like, got the beer, and then go ahead, man.
Yeah, so then it goes back up. So then, like, right after he says that, then he goes right back up to the son. So the son's all pissed off, and he's like, "Oh, he's gonna pay. I hate him. I hope he dies. Blah blah blah." This kid is pissed. Like, he's wishing death on his old man. So all of a sudden, he looks in the window again. He looks. He's looking at the window this time, sitting from his bed. It floating right there from a two-story house. It right there in the damn window is this like Grim Reaper looking thing. Like, it is grotesque. It's like skeleton, part flesh, part
bone.
And
it like smiles at him and shit, you know?
It smiles. And then you know what his response is? "Oh, let me go ahead and smile back." He's like, yeah. So he starts rubbing his hands together like he's formulating a plan or something.
Yeah.
So what was your response?
It's scary. Reminded me of the stuff that I would see when I was little.
Oh shit! We don't want to hear those stories. That's too scary. Fuck. We gotta have a podcast when we hear scary stories from Rose. She sounds like she's got some over ass stories. But what was I gonna say? Oh, did y'all see the Dracula poster in the back? I started laughing. I was like, go figure. We just did Dracula.
Oh no!
And they had badass.
I must have missed that.
Yeah, it's like right behind Billy. Yeah, I noticed it. I was like, because it's like right, like directly behind them, and they had like a badass Godzilla. Like, of course, I'm all like checking out the gear and shit. So I'm like, oh man, he's got all this cool ass shit. But that's when we get our first story, you know, Father's Day. And Gabe, you want to just break it down?
These stories aren't very long. The whole point of Creepshow is that it's telling stories from a comic book. And it's throwing it straight from that comic book that got thrown in the garbage. So it goes basically to the trash can. It flips open to the first day, to the first page, and it shows like the credits or whatever. And then it goes to the next scene, and then it shows like the comic page where it says Father's Day. So that's pretty much, we go into the first one, and it's Father's Day. Now, with the whole point of this little mini sketch. Is basically the whole family is getting together. They meet like every third Sunday in June. with their great aunt called Julia. Oh, what's up?
Oh, you know, you said every third Sunday in June, which is Father's Day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. Which is Father's Day. So they meet with it. So the nephew, the niece, and the niece has like her own. She has like her new husband, and this is where they start explaining it. They're there with. I think it's like their aunt also, and they're go ahead and they're explaining to him. You know, why do they have to meet for a special dinner for Father's Day? Well, the great aunt, who's called Bedelia, they end up explaining her story is that she was taking care of her father, who, you know, happens to be rich by criminal means. They don't really
bootlegger.
They don't really say much. Yeah, they say more or less like bootleggers, hit assassins, you know, things of that sort. Basically, he's doing a lot of criminal stuff that he got wealth. Anyways, Bedelia, who happens to be taking care of the father, she ends up getting a boyfriend. They end up killing the boy. The dad ends up killing the boyfriend. So now all of a sudden she starts going crazy. She starts losing it. And then one day for Father's Day, supposedly, and I'm using the little quotations in the air, she ends up getting a marble ashtray and banging his head like, pretty much like killing him, like hitting him in the head to where he's dead. So ever since that day, you know, I don't know how the cops or anything fit into this, but either way, she got away with it. He's dead. The family got the money. So now they got the inheritance. So now they're all rich. So now they meet up every, you know, Father's Day because, you know, the crazy grand aunt is all crazy. They meet up. So before she goes in to have the family dinner, which the whole family is waiting for, she decides to go ahead and sit down at the grave where her father is buried. She's all drinking Jim Beam. She's having a good old time, you know, but she's like pissed off and raging about how her father was abusive. What happens? Again, that they're going real quick with this. The damn father just comes straight out of the ground, comes and starts asking, "Where's my cake?" Now, you're probably wondering, like, why would you say that? Well, in this case, every Father's Day, spoiled as he is, he always wants a Father's Day cake. He feels like that's his celebration. That's his cake. He wants it. Anyway. So
this is another dad that I would be like.
What, where's my cake? Yeah, that's Chris for sure. You bitch!
I want my cake, you dirty bitch! I'm gonna have it! Where's my cake? You promised me my cake!
They talk about, like, I think you had mentioned it, to where, like, she had, her like, a boyfriend that got killed in a hunting accident, you know, because of the dad. So I kind of, like, and then him saying cake, I kind of had this feeling, like, that maybe he was, like, molesting her somehow, and then, like, cake was, like, verbiage for, like, you know, putting out. I mean, I know there's a physical cake there, but just the whole that he killed, like, he wanted to keep her for himself kind of deal, you know. And this is kind of
right. There are some crazy parents out there that are very clingy to their kids. They can't, it's hard for them to imagine that their kids can go off and actually have a life. Some of these parents will do things and blackmail or just overall intimidate their kids and make them feel horrible just for wanting to leave. So they have no choice but to, they feel like they're obligated that they have to stay. And that's part of that abusive relationship that she had with her father. And it's kind of nuts. That's kind of where this comes in. So the lady or the daughter ends up taking it upon herself to, like, you know what? I'm just going to kill you. I'm already losing it. What does it matter? I don't really care. I'd rather kill you than having to deal with more of this abuse. Well, as it turns out, because they – if you notice, there's a trend with all these little stories in these movies that – every time you take a bad action, bad stuff occurs. So in this case, even though she was abused, killing is not a good thing. So in this case, the dad comes back as a curse and not only taking her out, out the rest of the family members.
Yeah, it kills like everyone. And like my favorite is at the end when they're like looking around, like the his nieces or whatever, and the dude and he comes out of the kitchen. He's all like, "It's Father's Day, and I have my cake." And it's the head of the aunt. Not Bedelia. It's the other one, right? It's the aunt, whatever her name is. The one right. That's all snotty, even more snotty. So, yeah, pretty fun, pretty fucking interesting. Intro. It's like the slowest of the ones, right? What y'all think?
No, that one. So to me, that was my favorite of all the sketches. That one was my fave. And some things I pop for, you know, besides like the dead dad being like a fucking, you know, dick about, you know, saying cake and all that stuff. And Rosie is smarter than me here, so she caught like the molestation possible abuse angle there too, which I didn't catch, but y'all
did. Yeah, because he kept on saying like, you know, where's my cake? And it's like anybody that would act that ridiculous, it's kind of like it doesn't seem like they just want like a regular, you know, chocolate cake or something. You know, Chris like chocolate cake.
I took it as a reverse inverse of that one Twilight Zone where the dad grandfather is dying and he makes them all wear a mask till midnight, but then their faces are going to be permanently like that in order to receive his inheritance. But and I figured maybe this is the reverse where they mistreated him in his dying days and then just let him die, and then now he's getting revenge on him for mistreating. That's what I took, but I guess I was wrong. But I popped for the blonde boyfriend guy. Because that guy was in Glengarry, Glen Ross, and he's the one that says the what's his name.
Ed Harris, yeah. He comes out on Enemy at the Gates, the sniper. So
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Enemy at the Gates before I saw this. So when I saw him in this, I was like, oh, the guy, the sniper from fucking Creepshow, the guy from Enemy at the Gates. Like, damn, he was young here, you know, because on Enemy at the Gates, he's like, you know, way older, like damn near 20 years later or whatever that came out, so.
And I pop too for like when the fucking tombstone falls on him at night and it kills him that way and shit. I'm like, damn, they're getting creative with the ways they're getting dark here. But like Gabe said, the theme here, this whole thing feels so much like Tales from the Crypt, because it's like there's unethical issues on both sides, but someone takes a deeper, more unethical action. And then they get their payback in spades at the end. It's like, it's just so, it's kind of a tragic, traumatic show in that way. And it just felt like that. And then on top of that, you have this fucking, the Grim Reaper character that, all that stuff. It just, it felt very much like a movie version of Tales from the Crypt.
What do you,
yeah,
what do you,
it,
go ahead, man.
You know what makes this really interesting, though, it's, I mean, we're all interested in the stories and we're looking at it, but I guess what kind of gets you grasped and what it's known for, a lot of people really like about it, is that this is supposed to be a comic book themed. Mm-hmm. So like when you're watching it during these scenes, it jumps into like there's borders, like there's either borders or splash. Dramatic senses like around these characters. Yeah. So it's not, even though there's actual footage and real life people like acting it out in the background, they have like some animated stuff going on throughout this movie, which like I said, that Creepshow is kind of known for doing all this little comic thing, especially since we're supposedly reading the comic, you know, from the trash can.
Yeah. Now this one, like yeah, when he pops out of the back, like I go, oh my god, and then that thing in the background, yeah, like it shows like comic book style, really cool shit. But what if we're gonna rate the whole film as a whole at the end? But I want to know just like the rating, what you give them. And Chris, what do you give this one, man?
Oh, absolutely. That where's my cake? That one was my favorite of all the sketch. I mean, everyone except for the redneck with the green stuff growing on them, except for that one, I liked them all.
Don't let and go. When they're dancing.
Like, my God, that disco song that they were dancing to, I popped for that. That was fucking great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but this one of all of them, they were all good, I mean, except for the alien or redneck guy. But I'll give this one my favorite.
Well, what do you rank it out of 10?
Oh, out of 10? Probably 8.5, 9.
8.5, 9. All right, Gabe, what do you got this one?
Yeah, honestly, I'm there with Chris though. That Father's Day was actually really good. This is like my second favorite out of the whole movie, out of a whole, and I have to go with the 7.8. Hmm. It's pretty damn good though. I actually really like it. Very animated. So
pretty damn good, huh? Yeah, I give this one 8 out of 10. I really enjoy like just the whole build up, the whole, I love all. It's all quotable. The ad, but I was watching it yesterday or the day before, and like just the promo that the Aunt Bedelia is giving to the gravestone is really good. I'm like, man, she's probably one of the best acting in the whole. Well, besides Leslie Nielsen, but just for like someone that's just acting against the gravestone, you know, it's pretty over. But that's Father's Day, and we'll go ahead and get to the lonesome death of Jordy. How do you read a madman's mind? Teach me the art of war. For I shall bring more than you bargained for. Give me an ultimatum that I could not dream of. Spells of a crying nation. Death of Jordy Verrill, man, and stars Stephen King. When I saw this as a kid, I was like, I just knew that was Stephen King for some reason. I must have seen him before on something else, but I'm like, who's this guy? Why does he look familiar? But the whole film, segment is just Stephen King and Bingo O'Malley, just one other person. And I know y'all guys have said a few times that's probably y'all's least favorite, but it's my favorite because I guess it's so fucking sad. But can you just break it down for us, Gabe?
Yeah, pretty much. There's not really much to this story. This is the second story of the movie, and it's a meteorite that crash lands in the backyard of this. I don't know if this is offensive, but backwoods hick. This kind of country looking hillbilly fella. So
Jesus!
He ends up seeing this, and he's like, "Whoa!" So the way he carries himself, he's not very smart. So he goes over there and he's looking at this meteorite and he's like, oh man, oh, I could go ahead and sell this to the college down the street. They'll give me some money. So the idea is that he wants to sell the meteorite to the college to get some bucks, so that way he can pay off his house loan. So the amount of money he's asking for, or he has it in his mind that he's talking to the college professor, is that he wants $200. That is a damn good house loan there, man.
Yeah.
$200.
I was laughing at that whole boat, that whole like going back and forth like in his mind, because it's like the professor, the doctor, his dad, they're all the same person and shit, like, you know. When he's having those flashbacks, he's like, "Not to whatever Verrill didn't raise no dummy." He's all talking about it. He's like,
"Yeah, I don't know what he said, but he said something along the lines of, my daddy ain't raised no shtick." Or
yeah,
I was like, what is he saying? Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. It's probably some kind of offensive term now, but either way, I was like, what the heck? And I was like, it sounded funny the way he said it, but
I'll be dipped in shit if it ain't a meteor.
Yeah. So this guy gets the idea that, like, let me go ahead and touch the meteor. It should be all right. So he burns his two fingers and he puts them in his mouth. And he's like, oh, man. Oh, that's hot. So he goes gets a bucket of water and he comes back and splashes it on it. Well, what happens, he cooled it down so much, like, too fast, he ended up breaking the meteor in half and all this ooze ends up coming out of it. So now all of a sudden he's going through the whole imagining thing again, trying to sell a broken meteor to the college. So now he's starting to get the idea like, damn, I done messed up. I can't do it. I'll try it out tomorrow. That's all I can do. So he goes ahead and picks up the darn thing, puts it in a bucket, and he goes inside to go ahead and he's drinking his beer and he's watching wrestling. Some old wrestling show or something. Anyways, he starts looking at his fingers and he starts freaking out because they're all, they're all zit looking. They're all bubbly. He's like, what the heck?
Yeah, that shit looks gross. And before it even starts turning green, you just see the little bubbles on it.
Yeah, and it's gross because he keeps sticking his fingers in his mouth. He's like sucking it like it's going to make it better. So he's like, oh man. So he tries to ignore it and he keeps drinking. It goes to cutscenes and it goes outside to where that ooze came out of it, and apparently grass is growing everywhere. So all of a sudden, and it starts leading away towards that bucket of where the meteor is. So now all of a sudden, the house is starting to get covered in weeds. So as he's drinking, he sees his fingers start. They look like a moss, like grass, like it's starting to cover his fingers. And so he's about to stick his fingers in his mouth again. He's like, no, 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 don't do that. That's probably going to be gross. Oh, I know. He gets this idea, like, again, I don't know what the mentality is, but he runs to the kitchen. He starts looking through his cabinet, and he pulls out a bottle of vodka. So I was thinking, oh, he's going to use it like rubbing alcohol and maybe burn off whatever's on his fingers. No, no. This guy is being silly. He goes ahead and reaches into the fridge, grabs some orange bucket, a little pitcher of orange juice, drowns the whole thing in a vodka into the orange juice, and starts chugging it. So he thinks like, oh, I'll go ahead and drink it. Maybe it'll go away, or maybe the alcohol in my system will kill it. No, after a while, he starts noticing that it's starting to cover up his body. It's all on his chest line, his shoulders. It's looking pretty gross. Before you know it, everything is covered in grass. He's covered in grass. It looks pretty disgusting. He takes a turn for the worse and says, well, there's only one way out now. You know, he shoots himself and he kills himself. But it's not him. It's just like a big green grass thing. So it's not like you're seeing a person blow his brains out.
Yeah, just a big old fucking log with full of fucking tree gimmicks on him that blows up. But he's like, just this once, you know. He needs the fucking good luck or something. But it's all bad luck, man. But yeah, I used to hate this one growing up. I was like, this is such a stupid one. Now I guess because it's so like quick and ridiculous and over the top. He's like, no, you know, then he's fucking like, his dad's trying to talk him out of jumping into the water, and because that's what makes it worse. He's like, you know, oh, he just, oh, that feels good. Oh, then, so it's just like over the top, ridiculous now. Chris, anything you like about this one, or you want to just give your rating on this bad boy?
Honestly, I'll give it maybe a 5.5, because then that's purely personal preference. It has nothing to do with literary style or production or anything like that. None of the, you know, major criteria, just I didn't really care for it, but I popped for the old school wrestling, though.
Yeah, it's like one of those Samoans, right? One of the Samoans, it's like, yeah, one of the Samoans, and that's it, but fuck it. Gabe?
Shoot, darn rating. This thing was slow, it was terrible. I mean, grass, I mean, like, that just didn't seem horror-themed at all. I felt they could have done something better. I'm going to give it, like, a 2 or 3.
Dang. That was bad. Y'all are shitting on it. For me, I'm going to give it the most ridiculous rating for y'all. It's a 9 out of 10. I love this one, dude. Like I said, I used to hate it, but that's what happens when you fucking watch too much horror. You start liking shit that you wouldn't like, so won't stay on it too long. We are going to get into the third one, the third segment, something to tide you over. Like we were saying, this one's got Ted Danson and Leslie Nielsen, dude, and this one's kind of like, you know, not a lot going on either. It's real quick, but it's like a good little, you know, good revenge story, if you want to talk about that one.
Yeah, this one's actually pretty good. This is probably like my third favorite, though. As far as it's called Something to Tide You Over. Now, the whole point of this is Leslie Nielsen.
Richard!
The only thing I really know this guy from is those comedy movies, which is Naked Gun.
Yeah.
Those are the only thing, but he's a good actor. It's weird because he's taking a turn for seriousness in far as this movie. The whole point of this is that Leslie Nielsen, his wife has been cheating on him with this young guy, so he pays the visit to the young guy, and now he's going to exact revenge on both of them. What does he do? He has his own private beach. Apparently this guy has money. He comes from money or who knows what.
Either way, he has a beach.
Yeah, he does. He has Comfort, his own private beach.
It's called Comfort Station, right? Or something like that. That's right. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's cool about it is that this guy's like, look, we're going to go ahead. He keeps admiring this television set that this young guy has. So anyways, he pulls out a gun and says, look, I caught you all. I know you all have been sleeping together behind my back. She's been cheating on me. You know what? We're going to go ahead and fix things. We're going to make it right. Okay, all right. Look, she just wants out. She's not happy, blah, 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 whatever. He's on. Look, no one takes anything away from me, even a woman. And leave it to this guy. He's all... you know, he's very possessive. So he wants to treat him. He wants to teach him both a lesson. So he goes ahead. He takes the guy out to the private beach, and he makes the guy ends up digging a hole. So he's all like, "Okay, jump in." He's like, "I ain't gonna do that. That's stupid." They're at the edge of the beach. He's like, "Do it, or you're gonna get shot."
I would have just let him shoot my ass away. I wouldn't even gotten with them. I'd be like, "Man, fuck you." You know, like, fuck all that shit.
I mean, it's amazing though. Like the dynamic. I noticed that right from the get go. Like Leslie Nielsen shows up at his door, and you know he's talking to him through with the security chain on and everything. I'm like, if you stole a dude's wife out from under him,
and you saw him show up at your door, you better like, you know, you better not, you know, you better have some witnesses. Let's just say that, right?
No,
I don't know. I guess the guy was trying to play it cool because I'm not sure how they didn't really explain how the boyfriend and his wife knew each other. They're probably all good friends at some point, or maybe they're co-workers for whatever company they work for or something. Either way, I guess he was trying to play it cool because the guy was half asleep on the damn couch when what time was this? Because he said the girl was going to end up dying. The tide was going to come over because he did the same thing to the girl, and the girl said the girl was going to end up dying by 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. So waking this guy up, I'm assuming probably 6 or 7. The guy's half asleep, and he's letting this guy in.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing here. I mean, whatever backstory you want to make up for this, the whole point is that these things are short, and they just want to get to the revenge part. So at this point, the guy's already. He dug a hole. He jumped in. They pretty much buried him. So then Leslie Nielsen, what he does, he sets up a camera, he sets up the television. And he says, "Look at this great quality." Man, it's all old tube TV. It's all terrible. But, I mean, this is 1982, so, I mean, what can you expect? So he's all, "Look at this." He's all, "I just want to let you know, let's change it to this channel. Oh, look at that. It's my woman. Look, she's also in the same position as you. Oh, you're both going to die. You're going to drown because the tide's going to come and wash you over." And he's all, "I swear I'm going to get you for this. I'm going to get you." "Yeah, yeah, sure. Don't hold your breath." Or do hold your breath. Ha, 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 ha. Starts laughing. He's all crazy. He goes back to his pad, and he lifts up this big old portrait picture, and it has like 6 television screens. And on that, he's recording... He's recording the couple. He's recording the couple so that way he can have it for his own personal viewing.
Yeah, it was like that movie Sliver.
The what?
It was like that movie Sliver.
What's like Sliver?
You like how he had the TV screens, he's sitting there watching people and shit. Don't you remember that movie from the 90s?
I just watched it. What are you talking about? The what TV screen?
Remember Sliver, like the fucking stalker?
With Michael Rooker in it.
Yeah.
And
like the whole thing is he's watching all these different women on it had that feel to it, like that. Like it's like Sliver where he's a fucking sociopath.
Psycho. But on Sliver though, he's watching it like through every person's eyes. Because he has like a telepathic link on all of them. As far as this one, he's doing it. He's watching it through a television thing.
It
made me like kind of guess like how many times has he done this? Because he has like a really over ass video collection, and it just seems like that's what he does. Like he like kills people and records it, and like just for like to go back to it. You know,
seems right? Kinda, like, serial killer. I don't know if this is like his first time doing that. But as far as that goes, he does it. He's recording them. You see the water go over their head, and they drown. So he comes back the next day, and he sees that they're gone. So he's all like, "Huh." He's kind of curious if they died or if they got away.
Yeah, I like
he's
that
all,
part.
Nah. He convinces himself. He's like, "No, the tide got him. Yeah. The tide got him. Yeah. They're dead. So he convinces himself. He goes back home. All of a sudden, he's taking a shower, and there's like this weird smog. There's this weird smog that's kind of coming up towards his house, his pad. And then all of a sudden, what happens? All of a sudden, you see out of the smog, these weird, monstrous, zombie-like footsteps are coming. Well, it's the couple. And now he's shooting. He runs into them. They're saying that they're going to go ahead and kill him to get revenge. And he's like, no, but I don't think so. And he's shooting them. It's doing nothing. They look grotesque. They have seaweeds all over them. They're gross looking. And pretty much they go ahead and they take him. They take Leslie Nielsen. Do the same to him. And he's I can hold my breath for a long time.
Yeah. He sees like a little crab or something, right?
He was all pissed off. But they did the same shit to him. Now, whether if they went back into the ocean or if they just dropped dead there, either way, they set up the camera and the TV just so that they do the same shit that they did to him, so, or them or whatever. So, yeah, it was interesting, just mostly just for that actor, Leslie Nielsen.
Oh yeah, for sure. He makes it, you know, fucking interesting for sure. Without him, Ted Danson, of course, he's famous, but he doesn't do anything kind of crazy. But I'm gonna get you for this, Richard. I like that part. And I love the way there was this old school podcast I would listen to, and they had did like a kind of a compilation of like the music of Creepshow, and they would have little, you know, snippets of the voices and the gimmicks in there. And like, I loved it because it's a really good little soundtrack. And they were playing that, if you can only hold your breath, and like, come on, Richard. And like, I was like, wow, it's because I like woke up like while the podcast was playing, like in the middle of the night. I was like, man, that's kind of creepy when you're like, you know, in the middle of the night, you just hear that kind of like those voices. So it's always gotten more over, you know, for me after kind of going through that. But for me, I give something that tied you over a solid ass 8 out of 10, man. What about y'all guys?
Oh man, again, like I said, this is my third favorite, but there's only 5 of them, so I mean, it was good, but so. I'll give it like a good solid 6.
Chris,
I'm gonna give it an 8, and I mean, it's so relatable. I mean, it's stuff everyone's been through. Two things. Number one. Yeah, maybe you're not these rich, you know, beach house, country club, corporate elite types or whatever they are, but everyone's had, you know, lost a girl to another guy. Everyone's fucking, you know, and wanted the revenge motive. Everyone's, you know, horseplay at the pool, and maybe you get dunked underwater or whatever, and, you know, you have that few seconds of fear where someone just won't let you up, and you're fighting like hell to get back up, get your head above water or whatever. Or if you've been on the swim team and your coach is busting your balls that day and really making you do a lot of work in the pool, which I have, you know. It's like, yeah, I mean, you can relate to your head being underwater and trying to keep your breath. You can relate to being angry over losing a woman or whatever. Yeah, I mean, that it's so relatable, this show. And then you got fucking Ted Danson, you know, 3 years prior to Cheers, and you got fucking Leslie Nielsen, who's a fucking comedy legend. It's fucking great. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8, man. Fucking 8 is great.
8 is great. On to our fourth, The Crate. Now, this is, you know, Gabe's been popping for this one all night, dude. So let's hear about The Crate with Adrian Barbeau.
Ooh, man. So I love this one because of Adrian Barbeau. I also know I actually met the girl, but I didn't get the autograph because it was for a friend of mine. He loves her for like some other movies, but I mostly know her for she was Catwoman in the Batman animated series, and she was also the damn computer in John Carpenter's The Thing. So, but I mostly know her just for the Catwoman thing, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
You know what's funny? I know her, the first time I saw her was in Back to School. She's like the bitch wife to Rodney Dangerfield in the beginning when, you know, she's cheating on him with some other girl. And he's like, no, this is going to cost you plenty, you know, because he's all like, she's like, you know what, Thornton? I want a divorce. Oh, so we do got something in common. Here, sign these. Here he has them on him. Anyway, go on.
So, as far as this one's called, it's called The Crate. The whole point of this one is that it takes place at a college university, like this pristine college, and there's a janitor. I guess this is already at the end of the semester, mm-hmm. and there's a janitor cleaning up, and he happens to run into this crate. The crate is labeled 1830s. It's an old ass crate. Now, anyways, meanwhile, on the outside of this at this place, all these professors, all these teachers, and everybody's getting together. So, anyways, one of them ends up inviting their friend, and he happens to have Adrienne Barbeau, that's his wife. Now, the wife happens to be, she's a terrible person. She belittles her husband. She talks down to him. She embarrasses him in front of everyone. She's a drunk. She's drinking. She's a sloppy. She's a terrible woman. And and her main thing that she likes to say, she's all, "Well, didn't you bring the car around?" "Oh, I forgot about that, honey." "Of course you did. Of course. What would you do without me?" That's like her main thing. She says it out loud. Most people, she doesn't say it like personally, like, "Oh, up close." No, they're like a good distance from each other when she's yelling that out loud, and everyone just like, "Oh, why would they bring that woman? Oh, why would they bring her?" And she's just, you know, she's a terrible person. Anyways, the husband's like thinking like, "Man, I hate her, but I can't divorce her," or, you know, he's just, you know, he's a beaten down guy or whatever. Anyways, his friend,
Wilma, I'm doing the Fred Flintstone because her name's Wilma.
Oh, yeah, his name's Wilma, but everyone calls her Billy. That's her name in there.
Everyone just calls me Billy.
Yeah, that's what she says. So at this point, so the janitor ends up calling one of the professors, and the professor's like, "What's going on?" He's all like, "Oh, there's this old crate. You need to come and check it out." "Oh, no, it's probably full of old junk and everything. Yeah, don't worry about it. Just leave it there." "Well, it's pretty interesting." "How is it interesting?" "It's from 1830-something. "What? Huh, that is strange. Now I got to check it out." So he goes over there to go and check it out while, you know, his friend is dealing with his horrible wife. Now, at this point, so he goes and checks out the damn crate, and he has, like, another college professor with him and then the janitor. Well, leave it to the janitor and the other college professor. They both end up dying from the crate. Well, how can they die from the crate? There happens to be this ape-like monster that's in there with horrible-looking teeth. I mean, that thing is, like, that thing, it's not huge, but it is ugly. It's an ugly ape-like thing, and I kid you not, this thing has terrible teeth that'll rip through anything. Anyways, it kills the janitor, it kills the college, it kills the other professor, and the main professor is just watching in horror. He's like, "Oh my god!"
It kills like a grad student or something. Is this a grad student?
Oh, is it a grad student?
Yeah.
I thought it was another professor.
No, he brings that grad student, and he goes in there, like, I think he just see his shoe after that.
yeah, you see a shoe after it. So, anyway, so he takes the shoe, and he's like horrified by this whole thing. He's just like, "Oh, there's blood everywhere, this and this," and he's all upset. Anyways, he goes and runs to his friend with the horrible wife, but the horrible wife takes off.
Henry.
She takes off. Yeah, so he comes and he explains to him, to his friend, that, "Hey, it's horrible, it's horrible." He's all, "What? Well, what's going on? Just calm down. Here, have a drink." Oh, he starts chugging it. And he's like, "Whoa, whoa, man, I haven't seen anything like that, well, except for the movies." I thought that was funny. I was like, really?
So, a little nod and shit.
Yeah, so he goes ahead and drinks, so he chugs it. He's like, "So what's going on? Look, man, two people are dead." He explains the whole situation. There's a monster inside this crate that the janitor found, killed the grad student, killed the janitor. They're dead. What's that in your hand? "All a bitten shoe from one of them, the grad student. They're doomed. That's it. There was no bodies, just blood everywhere." "Oh, okay. Well, tell you what, So all of a sudden now his friend is starting to get this idea. It's starting to turn out pretty terrible now. Now he's all like, hey, you know, he brings up this idea that I'm going to go ahead and lure my wife over there so it can eat her. Yeah, and we'll go ahead and do that. But he doesn't say that out loud.
He just takes off, and then you're like, why is he going there by himself? And then he starts telling her, like, no, he comes up with this crazy story to get her to go over there, right? That he, molested the girl, or the girls went to go hide under the stairs, and what did he do to her, and all that shit.
Yeah, what happens is that, so to make sure that the professor, who's all full of anxiety and panic, he gives him another drink, but this drink has some sleeping pills in it. Mm-hmm. So he goes ahead and gives it to him. He knocks out, and then he writes out a letter saying, hey, to my wife, Wilma, or Billy, come over here to this place, and I'll be over there. The professor's knocked out on the couch right now, but you go ahead and come over here. He hurt some girl. He didn't explain much other than he hurt her, and he's all upset by it. So now she's afraid, and I can't I'm having trouble consoling her. I need a touch of a woman, and only you can do that. And just like you tell me, what could I do without you? And she's all laughing. She's like, what would you do without me? She's all drinking and everything, having a good time. So she starts on the way. She gets over there. This guy he got there way before she did, and he already cleaned up all the blood, all the mess. So he finds a crate, and who shows up? Billy or Wilma. She shows up, and she's like, where are you? He leads her down there. He says, oh, she's right there in the back corner. She doesn't want to come out. Did he hurt her that bad? Oh, it's horrible, Billy. It's horrible. You need to check it out.
Okay.
So she starts looking, and he's all, now wake up. Wake up! Hey, what are you doing? He's shaking her against the crate, saying, "Wake up! Wake up!" And he's just yelling it. And she's all, "What? You think it's funny? You think it's funny to be shaking me like that?" And so nothing happens. And he's like, "Oh man!" So he's like so disappointed. You have some nerve. You're an idiot. When's the last time you even got it up for us to do it in bed? She's belittling him. She's tearing him down.
The emasculator. Yeah.
That scene leaves you wondering, because every other scene, it presents itself as that it's him fantasizing about telling her off or doing something.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. Yeah, he kept on doing that. Like, he's all like, what's wrong, Henry? He's like, nothing, nothing at all. Everyone starts clapping.
Yeah, and that felt so for real that he actually had finally flipped and done it. And then, you know, so it makes you wonder, did he flip and do it and she has these mystical powers that she comes back from it still? And he's just powerless? Or was it yet another fantasy?
Exactly. No, that when he did the strangling her out the door, like, I kept on thinking it was real, but this one, I was like, there's no way this can't be real, because it's like, well, I mean, I guess it could be after all those fucking ridiculous.
It's still early in the story, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was my suspicions. As far as this goes, so he thought at this point, you think it's another fantasy, and of course, the damn monster comes out and actually starts eating her. Well, all of a sudden, it's not a fantasy. It actually worked out. And he's like, oh, shit. So he ends up chaining up. He gets a lock and ends up chaining up the crate again. So he's like, okay. So now at this point, he cleans up the mess. He takes the crate and he runs to this big chasm. This big old chasm-like thing where it's like a big old pool of water. He ends up throwing the crate overboard. So he throws the crate overboard, it sinks to the bottom, and he comes back, and he's sitting there, and his friend wakes up, and he's like, what's going on? And he explains to him, he says, look, don't worry about the bodies, you don't know nothing, I don't know nothing, but the bodies are missing, I cleaned up all the mess, the crate is gone, it's in this chasm, I threw it in where the water is, that monster that was in the crate, It's chained up in there really good, and he's dead. But how do you know? Maybe he'll get out. Nah, there's no way. You should have seen the way I did it. I chained it up pretty good. Trust me. Now you and me can play chess for the rest of our lives. Huh. So what are you going to tell the cops? Nothing. I don't know nothing. Oh. Exactly. That's a good plan. All right. So they start being chess. Now it goes back to the chasm, and it goes back to the water, and it shows the monster, and the monster just literally just breaks the crate, and then it just ends with the eyes of the evil monster as if, you know, well, he got out. And that's pretty much about it.
The crate. I know they have, I think there's something on there, like the Carpenter Expedition or something on that crate. There's a lot of John Carpenter, like, tie-ins. It's just such a cool horror movie fanatic. You know, if you're a horror movie fanatic, you know all these people, like, you mentioned Tom Savini. Like, his effects on this one are, like, amazing. The whole thing is great, but this is the one where when he takes the bite out of the dude's necks and everything, you're just like, wow, that looks fucking crazy, you know? And the, you know, I think they call him Tiny or whatever, or Fluffy. They call him Fluffy, I think is what they call the monster.
The monster.
But right. Just hearing you talk about it and watching it, like, it made me like – this one used to be my favorite, and then I started liking, you know, the other ones a little bit more. But this one, man, it's like – it's so good. You know, it's either they have a little bit of everything. And it's like the longest one probably, right, of the whole segment. So I think it's like 25 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So
right.
Yeah. It just a little bit beats the Ted Danson, Leslie Nielsen one.
Yeah, so after, like, talking about it, this might be my favorite again, dude. I'm like, I look back at The Lonesome Death, and I'm like, well, that one ain't shit compared to this one.
Yeah, honestly, like, it's just so cool, like, just the way that monster looks, and it's just that if you notice, like, throughout this whole series, you got the different colors, which makes it a little more animated. Mm-hmm. It's not animated, it just looks that way. They have, like, purple and red and blue, and they got all these weird trippy colors. When it's a dramatic scene for the monster, those colors pop out. But for any other scene, like, you know, where they're talking or something like that, there's, you know, it's pretty normal looking. It's just like regular footage. Honestly, this is like my favorite. That anytime I'm gonna reference like Creepshow, this is like my go-to one. Honestly, I don't really remember the other ones too well, because though I love Creepshow, I don't really watch part one that often. Mm-hmm. It's just like every now and then, every so. Part two is like where I usually watch that one a little more frequently, so I know that one like the back of my hand. But as far as this one though, the crate was good. It's my favorite one. I'm gonna give it an 8.5.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go. I'm right there with you. I'm gonna have to give it. Actually, I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10, dude. It's like almost perfect. It's an awesome ass one, Chris. Hello.
I'm gonna give it a 7.5, mainly because I pop for Hal Holbrook, who's been in fucking so much other shit that I've watched. He's been in Sopranos. He's been in Sons of Anarchy. He's been in Oz, and now he's, you know, young Hal Holbrook is in this. And it took a while for me to, like, give a damn about this. I'm like, oh, my God, okay. Here's this guy, and he's mad at his wife, and he gets told off by her. He's fans, like, okay. And then this fucking, you know, they're dicking around for 5 minutes with a stupid-ass crate, and I don't care. And I don't care about gorillas and primates. So, like, all this is going through my head. But where it pops for me, where it snaps for me, is when Hal Holbrook has the idea to, A, help his friend and help himself by trying to get at his wife, using it as a murder cover-up. And then they're playing chess, and he's being all cool, hey, there's nothing to track it to us, you know, and he's being all cool, calm, and collective about it. Like, that's where it starts to click for me.
I completely forgot he was in Sons of Anarchy as whatever her name is, Dad. So that's pretty cool. I forgot. Because I didn't recognize him when I first saw him until you said it. I was like, oh, he did come out in that motherfucker. So
it used to go Gemma.
Yeah, Gemma's dad, that, like, who's all like in the old folks home, and they all do all that shit. Real sad. I was like, I recognize him, but of course this was, you know, 82, and that shit came out like, what, 2015 or 16, so big old gap in between then, because he was already old here. So
yeah, and in 2006 he was Tony Soprano's roommate in the hospital.
Not interested.
America!
And we have our last segment, man. It's they're creeping up on you. Now this one's really short. If y'all thought that the Lonesome Death of Jordy Vero, I think this one is it's just boom bam, and it's probably the most. It's very similar to the Lonesome Death, where you have all the grass overtaking everything, and this one we have a bunch of bugs overtaking everything. So, Gabe,
I think this one's just more for the visual, just to give you like the creepiness. There's not really much to the story on this one. The only thing about this little sketch skit is that there's a wealthy man who's OCD. He is afraid of germs. He wants everything clean, and he lives in his penthouse alone by himself, everything organized, everything clean. Now, he's an asshole. I mean, just straight up, this guy's a jerk. He's mean to his employees. He's mean to the people that are taking care of his penthouse and all that. He is just like, he's just mean to everyone. He's a cruel person, and he has money to do so. So in this case, with him hating germs and he hates stuff like that, the main thing he really hates is bugs. I kind of hated this one more for the fact, along the side with me hating, like, well, I don't hate, but what creeps me out is creepy dolls, like Chucky and movable dolls and stuff like that. That freaks me out. But this one, second to me, like, things that creep me out or I just don't like, is cockroaches. Yes. I hate cockroaches, man. They're disgusting. They're horrible looking. I don't know. I don't like them. They're just terrible for me. So that's pretty much what this whole thing is about. To kind of teach him a lesson for being cruel to everybody and being mean to everyone, the way, I guess, nature wants to go ahead and teach him a lesson, like, hey, let's go ahead and get him, with some bugs. So it starts off with one cockroach, and he's just like, oh, he's already pissed off after he kills it, and then he goes ahead and starts making complaints and treating owners.
He calls the fucking lease office, like, what do I pay $3,200 a month for this penthouse? Which, for those listening in, at home, out in TV land, $3,200 a month in 1982 is like $9,500 a month today.
Where does he stay? New York or something? Where did they say where he's
at? No. They didn't say where he was, but it does imply that it is New York, because you see the Empire State Building.
Okay.
When he looks out the damn window. And he also says, too, he also references, he's all like, oh, I hate bugs. Everybody is a bug. They're all bugs. They all need to be squashed and killed. Yeah. I grew up in the Devil's Kitchen, right? Hell's Kitchen. I grew up in Hell's Kitchen, I know everything.
For those listening out there, Hell's Kitchen is west side of Manhattan. That was a predominantly, until the 80s, that was a predominantly Irish neighborhood. And what happened was I won't bore everyone with that, but yeah, that was a rough working class Irish neighborhood until the 80s.
That's pretty badass, no? Yeah, so at this point, it's New York. They don't say it directly, or if they did, I missed it, but they do reference a lot of stuff that it is New York. Anyways, at this point, it turns from one bug to two bugs. He's starting to treat more. The more he starts being asshole to everybody or a jerk, the more bugs that show up. Till finally, one of his employees died, and the wife of the passed away employee calls him up and starts like, "Excuse me."
Kastenmeier, that's the passed away guy. They were going to kick him off the board, but then he died.
I thought he killed himself.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, he did actually kill himself.
Yeah, the thing is that I think they fired him. Something happened to him, and that's when the wife,
Yeah, he couldn't take it, so he ended up killing himself. So then the wife ended up contacting him, and he was just treating it as like, look, yeah, that's nice. Well, I guess I don't have to worry about firing him since he's dead.
Yeah, that, That's what it was. Yeah. See, I knew it. Yeah. Like she's all like, I can't wait till you die, or like everyone celebrate. Yeah. Well, you'll be waiting a lot. A lot of people are gonna be happy. He's a big good shit talker. He's like Chris, dude, talking to the banks.
Yeah, she ends up saying, I hope you get cancer in the worst way, and she's telling him horrible things. So anyway, she's just like, all right, talk to you later, bye. You know, he like he just didn't care. He has the bug problem, and his whole focus right now is the bugs. Well, after that whole incident, the whole room becomes infested with bugs, and it just pretty much all the bugs end up disappearing by the time the exterminators get there. But then the bugs come out again, but they come out through his mouth, through his neck, through his head. Pretty much all the bugs are inside of him.
Mr. Pratt?
So he... Yeah, pretty much. They ended up killing him. So, I mean, the bugs ended up murdering him. So, yeah, that's pretty devastating. You know, teaches you not to be cruel, or you'll get the worst thing against you, you know, whatever you hate. And so his thing was germs and bugs. So he got bugs against him.
He got bugs crawling out of his butthole and shit, dude. It was pretty over.
Which is a lot like a movie that came out 3 weeks earlier, Halloween 3.
Oh, yeah, with all the gimmicks,
exactly.
The snakes, yeah.
Season of the Witch, in that case, it wasn't just bugs, they also had snakes that would fall out of your damn mouth. But as far as that goes, honestly, I'm going to get, this was good, but I hate roaches, man. I don't even care, like, what kind of movie it is. Man, I see the nasty things, they're disgusting. So, honestly, I'm giving that one at least, like a 3 or 4. It was just slightly better than the stupid grass one, only for the fact that, you know, again, it's, I don't know, it's not grass.
Yeah, this one I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. It's one that I enjoy, but it's not something like, oh, I have to watch this one. The part that really like grossed me out is when he's pouring like that cereal, that gimmick cereal, and fucking bugs come out of it. I thought it was like the grossest thing. Like you're getting ready to eat, and then you just see fucking bugs coming out of your shit. CJ, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you and G Money on this one, man. Fucking A, man. The roaches thing made it just gross and made it unappealing. And it's like the core concept for the story is good. And I honestly thought that the Ted Danson, Leslie Nielsen one went on a couple minutes too long than it should have. And I thought that maybe even the Hal Holbrook one with his wife Billy, that one went definitely 5 minutes longer than it should have. Take away 3 minutes from Leslie Nielsen, Ted Danza, and 5 minutes from Hal Holbrook, and put those 8 minutes onto this, and not be so out there with the fucking roaches until the end. And this would have been a really good sketch.
I don't know about all that, but no, the crate did seem kind of overly long with the you know, too much back and forth. But I still loved it, you know. But it did seem like, yeah, you could have cut 5 minutes from that, and I think it would have, you know, because that's the only one that felt like you were saying, like, oh, we're doing this. It's the only one that when business picked up, then it was really good. But there was like a lot of just of the, you know, just ridiculousness. That's the one that could have been like a movie, because there was so much shit going on. You know what I mean? I'm like, what the fuck? You know, he's a professor and they have the whole school thing. Like, that's the only one that actually had like a whole story, of course, because it was the longest one. But yeah, this one, this was the one that as a kid this one and the Jordy Vera one I didn't like at all. I was like, these are stupid. I love the crate. And the other two where I was like, yeah, they're okay, but the crate was the only one that I was like, oh, dude, I have to watch this one. Like, you know, I would just fast forward to that one most of the time. But I can't wait to talk about part two, because I think that one, they're all like about 25 minutes each, so there's nothing like too quick. It's all a lot of build-up, which is completely different than this one, because this one's like, you know, it has like one or two semi-long ones, one medium, and then two really short ones. But the other one, it seems a lot more better paced. But of course, we'll get into details, you know, next week, because I think we're going to do part two next week. So,
just to kind of give like even though those stories already finished, there is the epilogue on this, where pretty much it goes back to the little boy and the Tom Atkins. The Trashmen are coming around. They end up finding the comic book, and one of the garbage men happens to be Tom Savini. So I thought that was a cool little cool little thing in there. Now, as far as that goes, they start reading through it, and they start talking about, like, what they can order in comics. Because comics used to have a lot of advertisements where you can cut the little postage from it and fill out the information and put it in the mail to where you order. You can order all kinds of novelty kind of stuff. T-shirts, to...
Remember in fucking, like, Boy's Life magazine at the library? Remember they had the little postcard-sized things you could tear out?
Yeah. I honestly wouldn't even... I wouldn't even order anything, but I did rip them out just because I like the feel of just tearing it out.
I knew they were never going to send off a check to some random company from a magazine, but I would tear those out too.
just for no damn reason. I was just like, yeah, sure, why not? But so as far as that goes, he's flipping through it. Inside happens to be a little an advertisement for a voodoo doll. Well, anyways, that postage is gone. So they're like, oh, look, someone already ordered it. Well, you knew it was the little boy. It goes back to the little boy, and he actually has, like, a voodoo doll, and he has a needle, and he's stabbing it in the neck. Yeah, so all of a sudden, the dad's like, he's, like, screaming for his life. He's like, my neck, it hurts. And he's all like, oh, that'll teach you to go ahead and throw away my comic book. That's pretty much how it ends on that note, with the Grim Reaper thing laughing the whole time. And it goes into, like, a cartoonish type style, and it ends. It's pretty entertaining. It's good. I really liked it. You know, again, they could have done out with, they could have done some better stories than the grass, but either way, winks at Joe, right?
No, and, oh, shit. That one got
pop. It's pretty good. I enjoyed this movie. I don't watch it as much as I do with part two, but it is a classic. If you look in the Creepshow, you'll either see pictures of the hooded Grim Reaper thing, or you'll end up seeing that ape monster thing from the crate. Those are probably the two most notable things out of this movie. But all in all, man, I'm going to go ahead and just give my rating, man. This movie's good, solid 7.5. I mean, it has its ups and downs, but 1982, they did what they can. Actors are great, but 8.5, you know, I'll watch it every now and then.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. It's a really fun – it's like one of those that I have to watch kind of like periodically. I mean, it's not up there with like Fright Night 1 and 2 for me, but it's like – it's really fun just because, you know, I'm like – it gives you so much to – even though some of them might not be as enjoyable, just having so much variety in it. Like, I always really love that. Like, we were talking about Tales from the Dark Side earlier and Tales from the Hood. I love those kinds of movies. Even if they're not too good, that's what makes it fun, is that you get so much condensed, you know, everything condensed into this film. So, yeah, 8 out of 10 for me. And then CJ?
Yeah, I'm going to give it the same 8 out of 10 just because, like, none of these stories left to itself is going to be a hour and a half, 100-minute movie. But, you know, the fact that it's a variety – it's a movie variety show – and most of these are pretty good, you know, and not that any of them, you know, don't have their flaws. The only flawless one, in my opinion, was Father's Day. But, I mean, honestly, overall, it was a good, fun, likable, you know, just, you know, it was fun for a horror movie. It was easy going. Nothing took itself too seriously, but at the same time, you weren't having a too, you know, all three of us here are probably, to one degree or another, ADHD in attentive form, so... For guys like us, like that, this can hold your attention in multiple different stories. It gives it the variety is the spice of life. So, yeah, I'm going to say it's an 8, and I enjoyed it. And we'll see how Creepshow 2 1987 was.
You better get your foot out of that door, mister, or you're going to lose it. I could bench 300 pounds.
Oh, and he said, because wasn't Leslie Nielsen in Airline or Airplane?
Airplane.
Yeah, I think so.
Remember his classic line for that is, they say, "Shirley, you can't be serious." "I am serious. Don't call me Shirley." And remember, in that, he said something about, "Don't call me something."
"Don't call me Mister. I don't know. You know who I am." I don't remember what the fuck he said. Chris, hello.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember that movie.
No, that was it. Joe's right. It was Don't Call Me Mister. Yeah, it was like I popped for that because of the Don't Call Me Shirley.
Don't Call Me Mister, motherfucker. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. And me, Gabe, and CJ, we'll see y'all on the next one.
Man, you gotta be shitting me. That mother's strong.
Strong.
Peace.
I'm out the door, dinosaur.